I was a little boy growing up in Quebec at a time when the French and the English didn't speak to each other. I grew up in an English suburb that was plunked like a carbuncle in the back of a very old French-Canadian village.
Anthropologist Wade Davis.
And there was literally a boulevard, Cartier Boulevard, that divided the English from the French. And I would go there to get cigarettes or milk from my mom at a little corner store owned by a Francophone couple, delightful old people. And I would sit there as they spoke to me in French and look across that road and think, wow, you know, right across that asphalt is another language, another religion, another way of being. And I was excited about that as a boy of 5 and 6, but also haunted by this sort of subtle prohibition, not from my mom and dad, but from my society that said I shouldn't cross that road. And I guess crossing that road is what I've done all my life.
Wade Davis has been called the Indiana Jones of anthropology. Over the course of his career, he's traveled deep into the Amazon rainforest to meet shamans. He's investigated the Haitian voodoo practice of using neurotoxins to create zombies, and he's climbed high up in the Tibetan mountains, photographing snow leopards. Davis thinks that indigenous people have a fundamentally different way of understanding the world than we do in the modern world.
Let's take the Aboriginal people of Australia. It's a perfect example because there's no civilization that was more diametrically opposed to that of the West. And when the British first arrived in Australia, they saw a people who looked strange, who had a simple material technology. And what really offended the British about the Aboriginal people is that they had no interest in progress, in improving upon their lot. And of course, that idea of self-improvement, progress, was the essence of European life. An idea, incidentally, that died in the blood of Flanders, but nevertheless was very much alive in the years of colonial contact with Australia. And because of this, the British, in their inimitable way, concluded that the Aboriginal people weren't human. They began to shoot them. As recently as 1902, in Parliament, in Melbourne, it was debated as to whether or not Aboriginal people were human or not. As recently as the 1960s, a school book, A Treasury of Fauna of Australia, listed the Aboriginal people as amongst the interesting forms of wildlife in the country. What the British failed to understand was a devotional philosophy too subtle for their comprehension, and that was a dreaming. And when the ancestors of the Aboriginal people arrived in Australia, the first people we know to walk out of Africa, they went walking, and they established perhaps 10,000 clan territories linked by a single idea, not just the song lines, which were the trajectories walked at the dawn of time when the ancestors sang the world into existence, but the notion of the dreaming. And what the dreaming was not a dream, but a state of perpetual existence where there was no past, present, or future. Indeed, in not one of the 670 languages and dialects of Australia is there a word for past, present, or future, or a word for time. The dreaming is the eternal moment whereby the world exists and yet is constantly being born in the realm of the dreaming, the realm of the human imagination. Now, what does this really mean? It means that the entire focus of Aboriginal life was the antithesis of progress. The ethos of that civilization was not to improve upon anything, but rather to do the ritual gestures deemed to be necessary to keep the world exactly as it was at the time of its creation. It's as if all of human thought in the West had been invested into pruning the shrubs in the Garden of Eden to keep it just as it was when Adam and Eve had their fateful conversation. It means, for example, you and I were raised to believe that a mountain was a pile of rock ready to be mined. You and I were raised to believe that a forest ultimately is board feet and cellulose. My friends and godchildren in the mountains of Peru believe that a mountain is an Apu spirit that will direct their destiny. My friends on the coast of British Columbia believe that those same forests that I logged as a forester were the abode of Hukuk and the crooked beak of heaven, cannibal spirits that had to be embraced during the Hamut's initiation, such that the wisdom of the wild would come back to the people in the potlatch. Now, the point's not to say who's right and who's wrong. The measure of people is not just what they do, but the quality of the metaphors that propel their society forward. The interesting thing is to note how the belief system mediates a relationship between the human population and the natural world with profoundly different consequences in terms of the ecological footprint. You know, the First Nations of British Columbia have lived on those coasts for literally thousands of years with a very modest impact, whereas my particular culture, my ideology, my way of thinking of that forest has torn it asunder in three generations. And this is a really important point. You know, all cultures are ethnocentric, you know, faithful to their own interpretation of realities. You know, people are always saying, oh, you Americans are so full of yourselves. Well, of course we're full of ourselves. Why shouldn't we be? You know, most tribal peoples are full of themselves. Most tribal names mean the people, the implication being that those blokes over the horizon are savages beyond the pale. My argument is that none of us, be it a nation state like America or a tribal society like the Warani, in a multicultural, integrated, pluralistic world, can afford cultural myopia, because that has been the curse of humanity. It's been the cause of all conflict. You know, we have to find ways to get around. And how can we do that? By recognizing that every culture is cut from the same genetic cloth, all have the same genius, all have something to say.
That's Wade Davis. He's an anthropologist, an ethnobotanist, and an explorer in residence at the National Geographic Society.